we need to recognize that fiction, popular fiction, film, TV, are manifestations of cultural desire. And we have to ask ourselves what it means about us as a people collectively and what it means about our society when we feature very popular shows, well-written shows, well-acted shows, well-produced shows with protagonists who are sociopaths. It's long been clear to me that art that becomes popular is a manifestation of collective cultural desire. And one example I use of that is that the music of Jimi Hendrix, had he been plopped down in the 1920s playing the music he did, it would probably not have been accepted. But he came at the right time for the society to accept it. Another way to put this is that I've always hated the novel Lolita. But that book has been very popular. It's considered great literature. And I agree with Judith Herman, who wrote about it, that it is a beautifully written apologia for pedophilia. And a culture that didn't have pedophilic tendencies would not glorify this book and would not recognize this book as one of the most important pieces of literature of the 20th century. And we can say this about, you know, rock music lyrics, that so many of them are so misogynist. And, you know, Bill McKibben wrote this interesting book called The Age of Missing Information, which is where he spent 24 hours watching every single thing that was available on cable television at the time, which was a lot less than, he spent a year doing this. And he had one of the essays in the collection was about dancing, and he watched a dance program. And he said that what was remarkable to him was that basically all the dances were about shaking your booty and were about sex. And I read this 20 years ago, but my recollection of his point was that, sure, dances about sex are great, but where are the dances for the harvest, the dances for community? You know, indigenous peoples would have dances for, you know, the fall, dances for when you're really hungry in the winter, you know, or dances for the time to collect the reeds and bundle them. Our culture doesn't care about nature, so we're not going to have dances about nature. And all of our songs are going to be about, I was on my baby and my baby was on me, because we have lost our connection to the natural world. And we're not going to sing about the beauty of herons. And you could only have lyrics as misogynist as many lyrics are in a culture that's misogynist. And that all sort of brings me to something very disturbing that I've been noticing over the last 25 years, which is The Silence of the Lambs was really sort of a watershed moment for me. And I think it's a very well done movie, and the acting is very good. The writing is very good. And I found it disturbing, not merely because it's supposed to be disturbing, but also because the character with whom we primarily identify is a sociopath and a murderer. I mean, the main character of that movie is not Clarice Starling. The main character of the movie is Hannibal Lecter. He's the main protagonist. But they still hit it a little bit by making it sort of about Clarice Starling. And what that movie did is it twigged me to watching the sociopaths. And of course, there'd been sociopaths in previous movies. There'd been, you know, the main character of Clockwork Orange is a sociopath. And the main character of the Old Testament is a sociopath. And so they have existed. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't exist in in Othello. What is it? Iago is Iago the is a complete sociopath. And I'm not saying those shouldn't exist, but what I'm seeing is now recently I've been watching The Sopranos, and of course, almost all, if not all, of the male characters in that film, in that series, are sociopaths. And I previously had watched The Wire, in which most of the characters are sociopaths, and I did not watch Dexter, where the main character is a sociopath, explicitly, and I recently watched Ozark, where most of the characters act sociopathologically, and I watched a couple seasons of Breaking Bad, and I had to quit because the main character had no redeeming values. He was horrible to everyone. And there are a couple points to be made here. One of them is that the people who wrote Breaking Bad explicitly said that they were not trying to create a hero, that instead they wanted to give a person, Walter White, an excuse to do terrible things, that he's a teacher and he finds out he has cancer and his insurance won't cover it. So now he needs to get money to pay for cancer treatments, and he is a chemist, and so he starts making meth, and he makes money at it, but then the cancer gets cured, and he no longer has that excuse, but he keeps going, and he has another excuse, and they take that excuse away. And they're intentionally doing this, which I think is a valid thing to do in art, is to set up a social experiment, to set up a character experiment, to make a character, give them this excuse like they did, put those away and see what happens. And one of the problems is that the public perceived Walter White as a hero. And even though the characters in the movie, I mean in the show, like his wife is saying explicitly, I am not your wife, I'm your hostage. And she says, and the son has great speeches about how his father is evil, and yet he was still perceived as the hero. Jack Forbes wrote an essay about this decades ago. I'm late to this party. Jack Forbes wrote an essay about this back, God, probably in the 70s, about the show, about the movie Paper Moon, which was about the character played by Ryan O'Neal and his daughter Tatum. He's a con man, and his daughter, he's sort of bringing her into this world, and they're both sociopaths. And Jack Forbes was saying, why are you doing this? Why are you, and Jack Forbes is an American Indian, he's saying, what are you teaching people with these? And I'm taken back to something that George Gerbner, you know, I interviewed George Gerbner 20 years ago. It was one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. He's the TV violence guy, which is meant, he's the guy who studied violence on television for decades. And he said that almost everybody misinterprets his work. That, well, there's two things. One is that he said, because there is more violence happens on television than in real life, it creates what he called a mean world syndrome, where people, you know, you can see, well, so last night, my mom and I watched a couple episodes of The Sopranos, and we saw three murders. That is three more murders than I have seen in my entire life. And you get this every day. If you watch television, you're going to see, you know, murders, all sorts of beatings constantly, more often than one does. And so he says it makes people think that the world is a nastier place than it really is. Because a lot of people can go their entire life without seeing a murder. Not everybody, obviously. But he said that's not the real point. He does not have a problem with violence in drama, that violence has a very important role in drama. It can be absolutely necessary to a plot, and it can be necessary to make a point. His problem was what he called casting in fate. He said almost nobody ever talked about this. That instead, violence, he says, is a social relation. And the question is always, who does what to whom and what happens afterwards? So there's a couple things. One is that I remember I've not ever seen an entire like Die Hard movie, but I was watching one of them 20 years ago and I saw 5 minutes of it as I was flipping through the channels of my mom's or something. I saw 5 minutes. I might even be wrong series, but anyway, there's a series with Bruce Willis in it where there's a lot of people die. And, at one point they come up and they're stopped at railroad tracks and somebody comes up behind them. There's the two protagonists in the front seat and then they're a kid in the back seat and the people come up behind them and start shooting at them. Bruce Willis and the other person start shooting back. Maybe it's Mel Gibson. I don't know. It's one of those people. They start shooting back and they kill the people and they're saved. And the whole scene, I was thinking, this kid now has 30 years of therapy. But there was no acknowledgement of that. Or another time I was watching the movie, was it Minority Report? Was that the one about they can see the future? Was it Tom Cruise? You can tell if somebody's going to be a criminal sometime in the future. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Anyway, there's a scene where there's a chase scene where people are, one person's chasing another and they're driving these futuristic, like, snowmobile things, except they can fly through the air. I don't know. It doesn't matter. The point is, at one point, Tom Cruise is trying to get away from the bad guys and he flies across where these people are washing windows or painting or something on a building and he goes right next to them and they fall off their scaffolding. And it's an intense shot. But all I could think of through the rest of the scene is those two people just fell off the scaffolding and died and they have families. And so one of the problems with the way violence is so often portrayed in movies is that there are cheap secondary characters who die and there's no accounting. And George Gerber made this point that when we see violence in movies, it's very, very clean in that the kid in the back seat does not spend the next 20 years waking up screaming every single night. And so that's one problem. And another problem. So back to George Gerber. His main point is that when men commit acts of violence in movies, especially against women, they do so with impunity. And when cops commit acts of violence in a movie, so you can have Bruce Willis can kill 15 people in the first 5 minutes of a movie if he's a cop. And if he's a cop, he kills 15 people in the first 5 minutes, everything's fine. On the other hand, if you have a woman who, say, kills someone who's sexually assaulting her, the entire movie has to be about how could a woman do such a thing. And I'm seeing this played out in The Sopranos. I saw this played out in The Wire. I see this played out everywhere. And I know I've been going on, but that's the secondary point. The primary point I want to get to is that especially over the last 30 years, I have been seeing an increase in sociopathic heroes. Of course, we can go back to the 60s and we can see this in, the Clint Eastwood movies. And I don't mean to imply this is a brand new thing. Richard Slotkin wrote this great series, about regeneration through violence, where if you look at American popular fiction going back to the 1780s, that basically it would show it had the same theme always, which is we want to fight clean, but the other side fights dirty. So just this once we have to fight dirty. So you would see, novels about, white people fighting American Indians and the white people want to fight clean, but the American Indians fight dirty. So just this once we got to fight dirty. Go forward to the 1830s. You can get, we want to fight clean, but those Mexicans want to fight dirty. So just this once we got to fight dirty. Move forward to the 1870s. Again, you've got American Indians. We want to fight clean. American Indians fight dirty. So we got to fight dirty just this once. Move up to the turn of the century and you've got novels written about the Philippines where we want to fight clean, but those Filipinos fight dirty. Therefore, just as once we got to fight dirty, move forward again. You go up to the 1960s, you get novels. We want to fight clean. Those Vietnamese want to fight dirty. So just as once we got to fight dirty, you got Dirty Harry, of course, wants to fight clean, but the criminals always fight dirty. So this is a trope. I'm not suggesting this is completely new. What I am suggesting is that we need to recognize that fiction, popular fiction, film, TV, are manifestations of cultural desire. And we have to ask ourselves what it means about us as a people collectively and what it means about our society when we feature very popular shows, well-written shows, well-acted shows, well-produced shows with protagonists who are sociopaths. But a sociopath in a film or a sociopath in popular literature or anything else is a valid dramatic tool. All I'm asking is, what does it mean when they are overwhelming us? And is there a relationship between the fact that these are so common and so popular and the fact that studies have shown that over the last 30 years, the empathy of young people and college students has decreased by about 50% when they do studies of the empathy of young people by asking them questions. If you have a sandwich and your best friend is sitting over there without any food, will you share your sandwich? If your friend is sad, does that make you feel sad? These questions like that. And the questions that they've asked students from 1980 to 2011, and I don't remember the exact number, but basically empathy has decreased by about 50% in that time. Is there a correlation between that? And is there a correlation between the fact that this culture commits genocide against every indigenous culture, that this culture, that 25% of women in this culture are raped in their lifetimes, another 19% fend off rape attempts, the fact that this culture is killing the planet, and the fact that this culture produces popular fiction where the heroes are themselves sociopaths? Is there a relationship between all of those things? I would say yes.